it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, Beaver Nation, and welcome to Beaver Banter, an Oregonian sports podcast. I'm Joe Freeman, and he's Nick Daschle. We work for the Oregonian, and we're here to talk all things Oregon State. Nicholas, how's it going, man?
Oh, just great. Yeah, it's kind of the, I want to say this is the easy part of the year, but as 2023 and 4 have proven, I'm not sure we have any downtime anymore, but it's a little bit easier now that football is kind of on mothballs and basketball's sort of winding down with the transfer portal, and it's all on you with baseball.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year for baseball. We got 2 weeks left in the regular season, then we got the Pac-12 tournament, and then everybody's favorite postseason. It's go time there.
Yeah.
Let's see. You know what? We're going to take a deep dive into baseball, Nick, which, like I said, has 6 games left in the regular season, but thought we'd throw you a curveball today and open with a little bit of hoops. Do you want to start with the men or the women?
Well, we're calling Oregon State basketball oops. We're not called
oops.
Just called oops.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a pair of programs reeling from for different reasons. You want to go men first? Would you like to go women's hoops first? Where would you like to start?
Oh, I don't know. I guess the men probably better, just because there's more positive news out of the men than the women. But
all right. Well, after a kind of a forgettable season and a roster that has been both decimated and flipped, let's get to men's hoops. You recently kind of talked extensively with Coach Wayne Tinkle, sort of detailed overhaul of the roster and kind of plucked his thoughts for what's going on. What say you about men's basketball?
You know, one thing it's kind of weird. People have been, they've been pretty much down on men's basketball for quite a while for, good reason. They haven't won, and they've, it's just after that 21 run to the Elite Eight, it's been just a downer for 3 years. But I've got some, I've been getting some emails and messages from people, and they seem kind of upbeat about what Oregon State's added to the roster ever since the transfer portal kind of cleansed out what was left of last year's team. I mean, this one guy who's a big, big basketball fan, he goes, I can't believe that I'm beginning to think Oregon State men's basketball might be have a better team than the women's team next year. He's not comparing the two as if they play each other, just the excitement toward what the men's team might have, going into next year than the women. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's starting to look like a real possibility, because, I mean, they lost some good players. There's no doubt. Jordan Pope and Tyler Bilodeau are pretty good players. They're going to Texas and UCLA, two teams that expect to be in the tournament every year, and they'll probably start for those teams. But what Oregon State has done is they've done what needs to happen in college basketball these days with the COVID year, the free year. The teams that win today are the older teams, the teams that got a lot of seniors and juniors. Oregon State's pivoted to a roster that's not freshmen and sophomores anymore, but a lot of upperclassmen. They got 3 transfers. I wrote 174 collective games they've had in college. Now, that doesn't mean that doesn't mean anything in terms of are they any good? I mean, one of them was a defensive player of the year in his conference. Another guy has started for a couple of years for a decent team. You know, Matthew Marsh has played 3 years for Wake Forest in a league that's got a lot of good posts, the ACC. I don't know. I mean, it's on paper, they look like they can be okay next year. They can make a run at 18, 20 wins, maybe. I don't, you know, the WCC isn't the Pac-12, and I'm not saying the Pac-12 is great. The WCC is not a terrible conference. They have some good teams, but Oregon State's got a roster with some of the guys they got coming back and the new players they're adding. I mean, there's reason to believe they could be an 18 to 20 win team.
Well, one thing that's interesting about the move to WCC, obviously they lost players, I would assume because of NIL reasons or a shift from the Pac-12 to the WCC, kind of a combination of things there. I would think from an NIL standpoint, they would be able to compete at or above, you know, most of the teams in the WCC. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, I mean, I thought with the team they had, you know, on paper last year, they were going to be probably a top four team in the WCC because, I mean, the bottom three or four teams of the WC are usually not very good. The top end, you know, Gonzaga and St. Mary's are usually top 25. And then there's always a team like a San Francisco or a Santa Clara that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I can see Washington State and Oregon State going in there and both finishing in the top five in the, you know, in the WCC. They both have good rosters. The depth is not quite as good as it was in the Pac-12. So there's going to be some W's out there. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, I think Oregon State just needs to win basketball games. It doesn't matter whether it's against Portland or, you know, Stanford. They just need to start winning some basketball games.
Yeah, it's hard to get, you know, momentum with NIL, momentum with luring transfers and recruiting and all that when you've won, what, 27 games in the last three seasons? I can't imagine, you know, that really stirs the motivational juices there. At some point, you got to show results. And, you know, as you well know with your pulse on fans, the fan base is sort of punted on Tinkle a couple years ago, you know, and I think at some level this was not a nail in the coffin for him, but most of fans have kind of jumped ship on this team right now. So I don't know about momentum and all that. He's got his roster, right? I mean, like you said, he filled it with mostly vets.
Yeah, there's still at least one more spot to fill. And I mean, another thing they appear to be pivoting toward is international type players. The international players, you don't have to pay NIL money to. They're not eligible for it. I mean, at some point that'll probably change, but right now they're not eligible for NIL money. So they have several guys that are international type. So that's a positive too, as long as they can play.
Yeah. Did you get a sense from him, and maybe you guys didn't go here, but like what style, how they will play, you know, what the nucleus of the roster style wise?
Well, I don't think he's going to change he's going to throw out his approach to, you know, what he likes to do, but what this roster is able to do that they haven't had for a couple of years is guys that can post up. Mm-hmm. And finish at the rim. They haven't had post up guys in a while. You know, Casey Ebekwe had some potential, but you know he had his hands were, I think half the time he dipped them in cement, and so he couldn't catch the ball. And Shoal Muriel just wasn't. He's just so fragile that you know he's hard to post up. They got guys. They got a couple guys now. They can get down low and really, you know, really do some damage inside. I mean, the guy from Wake Forest, Matthew Marsh. I mean, all he does is dunk. But I mean, 2 years ago, he shot 88% from the field. I mean, that would have been an NCAA record if he'd had hit the minimum for field goals. I can't remember how much he missed by, but it wasn't that much. But I mean, that's what he does. He dunks. And so they need a guy like that that can, get some easy buckets inside. That's one thing. I mean, defensively, they could be better because, Tyler Cochran, the guard from Toledo, he was the MAC player, the defensive player of the year. The other guard they've got, DeMarco Minor, I mean, he's 6 foot tall, but he averaged 9 boards a game. He's thick and tough. And so, those are, a couple things that they'll have that maybe they haven't had in the backcourt in a while. Plus, they got some size too on the wing. They've got a couple of 6'7" guys that can play, shooting guard and small forward. And they haven't had a lot of that, in a while either.
Okay. Well, you want to add anything else there, or should we shift over to women's basketball?
No, I mean, the only other thing I put in there is that Wayne told me that he and Dana Altman have agreed to a 4-year. They're going to play the next 4 years. They just have to figure out who's going to get the first home game. They both want to play at home that first next year. And so they have to figure out, who's going to do what. I don't know if it's going to come down to a coin flip or a drinking game or what, but something. But yeah, but they're going to play through the 27-28 year once a year.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. I know there was some debate about that, or at least confusion about that. So that's good news for all Oregon basketball fans. Not much good news going on with the women's basketball program right now. Of course, they lost nearly all of the roster, all the key pieces from last year's team that had an inspiring run to the Elite Eight. They just lost assistant coach Jonas Chatterton, who had been with the program for its, incredible run over the last 10 years. I think about what's going on with this team. If I was a fan, I guess I think about, my daughter's kindergarten teacher, shout out Miss Eldridge Burns, who is a passionate Oregon State women's basketball fan and a WNBA fan. And her and her husband go to, as many games as they can. They went to the Pac-12 tournament because it was the last one, and I know she, lives and breathes basketball. And I can only imagine the status of her emotions over the last, since the tournament ended. You kind of felt like you had this group together that could do something very, very special next year. And then slowly, one by one, everybody hopped off the boat. So, it's odd to think that the men's basketball team, which has been such a disaster, has more momentum than the women's basketball team, which has been so incredible. So, I don't know where are you standing with that right now?
Well, a lot of unanswered questions out there. I mean, it's not like I haven't tried to get some answers, but I mean, nobody's really talked. I mean, when players leave, they go into the ether pretty much. And, I've tried to get Scott to talk any number of times, and he just doesn't want to talk right now. I'm not going to say I can't blame him, but I don't know that the bunker mentality works these days. And eventually, people aren't going to forget. They're going to want answers. And, from what I've been able to gather from it, it was a combination of, NIL, the Power Five, not being able to play in the Pac-12 anymore. Because these players came to play in the Pac-12. It's the best. Mm-hmm. It's not the best. It's one of the top two conferences in women's basketball. And that's what they came here to play, and they no longer have that. I got the impression that, some of the players were not happy that, things weren't communicated to them about this upcoming season, because Scott wanted to keep the focus on the season during the season, and he didn't want to, get into next year until the season was over. And, whether that's a mistake, I don't know. I would like to, find out what his thought was on it, but I haven't been able to get that yet. But anyway, eight players have gone in the portal. Six of them have moved on, officially moved on to new programs. At least five of the eight are NCAA tournament type teams. Mm-hmm. The only two left are, Perova and Martha Peach, and you know they're still in the portal. I suppose there's a chance they could come back, but you know I wouldn't anticipate that until they actually do it. So Oregon State's left with five players plus a player that they've you know landed in the you know that they've got from the portal, this player from Spain who played for your great Florida State Seminoles last year. So, you know, it's just unfortunate. I mean, it's pretty clear what has happened in college sports. Winning just doesn't matter anymore. It's about, you know, what can you do for me? You know, what's the best situation for me? It's really not about winning anymore, because if it was about winning, unless there's something we're not seeing from inside the program, I mean, this team was set to win and win big next year. And if that mattered, you know, you would think most of these players would have stayed, but for whatever reason, they decided not to. Oregon State had plans to build a really good non-conference schedule for next year. There was plans to play a South Carolina, to play, you know, some top 10 teams in non-conference play, and really, you know, build a schedule that offset any issues with having to play in the WCC. But that apparently wasn't enough. So here we're back to square one again. And my thinking is, and no one said this to me, I just feel like this next year is going to be, they're going to get out of it what they can get out of it. And Scott's going to pivot, and he's going to come back with something that, you know, fans will like to see in a couple of years. That the thing with Scott is he really digs deep into recruits, and having to pivot quickly and grab players out of the portal, it's just not quite his thing. He wants to build relationships and you know, it's work for him. And I'm not sure that, you know, getting players, you know, over a weekend and, you know, a cup of coffee and whatnot is going to do, it will work, but you know, we'll see. He's going to have to do something, but I think in a year, the 25-26 team I'm betting is going to be pretty good.
Yeah. What comes to mind is something, you know, that I was thinking when you were talking about the men's basketball is like kind of a little bit of a pushback of the momentum they have is how much can you really accomplish with a completely overhauled roster in one season? You know, even if you infuse it with more talent, which I mean, I don't know the players that, you know, that Tinkle added, so I can't speak to the quality of the roster compared to last year, but you know, it's kind of like this year's women's basketball team. It was nurtured over the course of years. It was built from the ground up after, you know, a disheartening stretch. And you were finally starting to see kind of the fruits of that labor, and now it's blown up. So, I don't know what he can do for next season. He doesn't have a whole lot to sell beyond playing time. You know, he loses his conference, obviously, and you know, if I was a basketball player, I would wonder why this team blew up, why everybody left. Are there more reasons beyond the obvious, which I'm not saying there are, but if I was a player being recruited, I would wonder about all that, I guess. And so, you know, it's sad from the outside, and I'm certainly not a fan of the program beyond work capacity. You know, it's disheartening and it's disappointing for fans. And, you know, you take the football gut punch with Damian Martinez and all that happened there and all the, you know, defections. And then you kind of add this on top of it. And it's just a brutal situation. There's really no other way to describe it, I guess.
Which is why fans are so not really sure what the word would be, but I want to say almost over the top about baseball right now, because that's the one thing they got to hang their hat on at Oregon State is baseball. And when things aren't going well, I mean, it just multiplies, because they want something. They desperately want something to hang their hat on. And, you know, I guess we could kind of morph or, you know, pivot into baseball here, but I was, you know, I got to thinking with this, you know, this team was kind of struggling a little bit at the plate, you know, the road games. And yet this stretch here, this 7-game stretch might be what the doctor ordered. They went to Washington State Gonzaga, won 3 out of 4, got the bats going with that 9th inning at Washington State on Saturday, you know, went in the Sunday, really hit well Monday. They got a UCLA team coming in to Oregon State that just is horrible. And, you know, it's one of those series that they should be able to just dominate. And so, you know, if they can come out of the next weekend with a good win in 6 out of 7 games and win in a road series, that could give them some momentum going into, you know, a stretch that they need with Arizona and the Pac-12 tournament. Because, I mean, if they could really finish strong and maybe even win the conference, you know, let's say they go down to Arizona and do something, finish in the top 2-3 in the Pac-12 and maybe win the conference tournament, they can get a top 8 seed and not have to leave, you know, Goss for the NCAAs. I mean, it's sort of out there, but it just seemed like this stretch is what they needed because they were kind of, you know, they had become kind of average for a while.
Yeah, well, they really, I mean, the biggest kind of problem obviously was their offense. It had surprisingly, you know, hit a cold spell, I think over the heading into, boy, I want to say heading into Sunday's finale. It was either Saturday or Sunday's game at Washington State. They had they were averaging like four and a half runs and 6 hits in the last 9 games. And that just seems insane for the quality of the lineup and the talent that is up and down, you know, the roster. So, But like you pointed out, it seemed like that 9th inning kind of just oh so short rally against Washington State really kind of spurred something, because including that inning, the last 19 innings, they've scored 37 runs, had 36 hits, and, you know, hit 12 home runs, 9 doubles during that stretch. So for whatever reason, that kind of shook them out of their funk a little bit. You kind of touched about where things stand, just kind of set the set the picture for everyone. We're recording this on Tuesday, May 7th, by the way. 6 regular season games left for the Beavers, and they are 2.5 games back in the Pac-12 standings. 3rd place behind first place Arizona, 2.5 back of them, and 0.5 game back of 2nd place Utah. Like you said, they host UCLA, the last place team in the conference, this weekend, and then they finish at Arizona. So in a way, they kind of control their own destiny. I want to say Arizona and Utah actually play this weekend. So at some level, if Oregon State takes care of its business, that should, you know, create a 1-2, or at least give them the chance to finish with a regular season championship. It's wild to think that right now we're even like debating whether or not they could be a top 8 seed, because, you know, a month ago that was a foregone conclusion when they were a unanimous top 5 team in the country. But their road woes, their defensive woes, their bullpen issues, and then finally the nail in the coffin, the slump in offense kind of, you know, sent them into a bit of a tailspin. And so, you know, looking at today, D1 Baseball had them right on the bubble as a 9 seed. The RPI, you know, Warren Nolan, I think, gosh, I had this up a little bit ago. They are 15th, so quite a bit down in RPI. And there's a lot of work to be done, obviously. And I think that they have a successful tournament that would really help them. But, you know, what was once almost a given is now very much in jeopardy. So much will be determined over the next two weeks plus the tournament. But at some level, if they win the tournament, you know, they control their own destiny. If they can win the tournament, or excuse me, if they can finish strong here and win the Pac-12 and win a couple games in the tournament, I think they're in good shape there. But you know what's crazy, man? You look at the poll, the national rankings, and it is just over flooding with SEC teams and ACC teams, which I want to say those two conferences make up 13 of the top 16 or 17 teams in the conference. It's or in the national rankings. It's crazy. Pac-12 has three teams in the top 25, Oregon, Oregon State, and Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, it looks to me like on paper, if they could win five out of their next six, that would mean winning two out of three in Arizona, which, you know, isn't impossible. They could finish, you know, in the top two. That seems like that first or second seed in the Pac-12 sets you up pretty well, because don't you get the – if you're the two seed, you get, what, the five and eight seeds out of the in the tournament? In your,
you're
in
talking
your,
about the Pac-12 tournament, yeah.
In your pool – I mean, it just seems like you'd want to finish in the top three, because at least that gives you a chance if you're in, you know, one of the top two teams, get that at, you know, that fourth team in the Friday in the semis if you know you're happen to lose a pool game or something. So finishing in the top three is a big thing, but.
If you get a top two seed, you don't play on the first day. You would play on the second day, which I suppose doesn't hurt. And then, yeah, I mean,
Do they change the format this year?
It's pool play. So it's two games of pool play, and then they seed it accordingly based on how you do in that pool play. So, it just so happens that the first two teams don't play on the first day of pool play.
But I guess what I was saying is, if in the way it goes, the pool winners all advance to the semis, and then the next highest seeded team. Well, that's what I was saying. If you finish in the top three, you got a better chance of getting that one extra, you know, in case you happen to lose a pool game or something. But I don't know. I just kind of think Oregon State can win five of these next six, you know, win their pool at the Pac-12 tournament. I think they have a pretty good chance of getting, you know, an eight seed. I mean, it seems like playing at home for them would be a bigger advantage than a lot of teams, just because of the way they play at Goss. I mean, it just seems like it's a huge advantage for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, to reinforce that, they're 21-2 at home this season, which I haven't looked it up nationally how that stands, but it has to be, if not the best, among the best. Yeah. And then, you know, 10-2 in the conference at home. But conversely, they've really struggled on the road. They're 6-9. They got swept at USC, a two-game, you know, the finale was rained out, and they got stunningly swept at Cal, and that was kind of the first sign of things sort of hitting a lull. My read on why things kind of they hit that stretch, first of all, that happens in almost every season. I didn't think it would happen offensively to this team, just because it's so deep and loaded, you know, up and down the lineup. But in a way, I think injuries finally just caught up to them. You know, they've played the last 4 to 5 weeks, maybe more, without Trent Carraway. They, have played the bulk of the last month without Micah McDowell, who, man, he's battling that oblique thing. And I'm concerned that he may have re-aggravated that in Sunday's finale when it was either two or three hits, had a good game, because he didn't play on Monday. And I thought it looked like he might have sort of re-aggravated it, although he stayed in the game. So we'll have to keep our eye on that. Obviously Brady Casper came back, and then from a long absence, and then he kind of, you know, was scuffling there upon his return. Well, that's three starters of your lineup and three middle of the order players. And so, you know, for the team to do what it's done, it's the only team in the conference that scored over 400 runs this season is remarkable. It really speaks to their depth. But, you know, between that and some pitching injuries, eventually it kind of catches up to you. And so I guess we should have expected some kind of lull at some point. But I guess, you know, the cliche goes, you'd rather them be in a funk, you know, in April than in May and June. So there you go.
Yeah, another thing I was wondering, maybe get your opinion on, is the pitching. You know, that seems to be the number one bone to pick for Beaver fans, is they want to fire Rich Dorman every other day. And
yeah,
it, I think they either lead the Pac-12 in ERA or close, or in there among the top 12 or 15 teams in the country at ERA. Not that that's the, you know, that that's the only measure of a pitching staff, but it's a place to start. Mm-hmm. And I guess the reason fans are upset is because they've blown a lot of games, you know, late with their relievers. And I don't know, where do you think things stand with the bat, you know, with the guys coming out of the pen for Oregon State here going down the stretch?
Let me ask you a question, Nick. Let's play a little trivia. If I asked you how many teams in college baseball, in all of college baseball, have an ERA under 4, what would your guess be? No cheating. Don't look off the top of your head. How many teams in college baseball, 100, whatever it is, 118 or whatever it is, how many have an ERA under 4?
You know, I'm going to say probably 4.
Oh, wow. You went low. 6. The answer is 6, which is pretty low. And so I think the Beavers are at, well, what are they? 4.22. That ranks 16th in the country. And that is, yeah, they lead the
pack. That's after Gonzaga on Monday. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing people tend to forget is these are college players. They're not professionals who spend every day, you know, 8 hours a day working on their craft. They still got to go to school. They still got to, you know, study. They still got, you know, they're still 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And they're not professionals. And so, I mean, they work hard at it, but it's not a full-time job yet for them. So,
well, you know, even beyond that, I mean, again, by comparison, the bullpen and the pitching staff is very good. It's we're talking about a systematic issue in the sport. There's only so many, you know, pitchers, top level pitchers in the country. And I think the Beavers frontline players in the bullpen, we're talking about Bridger Holmes, who's a candidate for stopper of the year. You know, when you look at that funk they had, some of it was, you know, inflated a bit by 3 pitches, you know, 2 ninth inning home runs off Bridger, and he lost 3 games in a row. And 2 of those just happened to come in conference games against Cal, could, you know, the worst kind of possible timing there. And so that inflated things and sent them, you know, you flip 1 or 2 of those games and we're having a little bit of a different conversation. But otherwise, he's been dominant this season. So you're solid at the back end. You know, Kyle Scott, who was supposed to be their closer, was injured for 6-8 weeks there. He's back and he's been a little up and down, but he's a veteran that you have back there. And then Nelson Keljo has pitched very well the last 2 to 4 outings and seems to be, you know, kind of becoming a person in the back end there that they can count on. So there are arms back there. It's when you get to that second, you know, that second and third level where they've run into trouble. We saw it last night with Morrell and, you know, I'm spacing on who Hutchison hasn't been nearly as good this year as he was as a freshman. Ian Lawson, it was Keelan Oaks. Keelan Oaks struggled. So, you know, we've seen that, but we've seen that across college baseball. It is the ball and the bats are back to being whatever is going on with them that makes offenses soar. So we're seeing an increase in offense over the last few seasons. And, you know, between just a lack of depth across the sport and pitching and just a general, that's the way the sport is. That's what we're seeing. So, I mean, I get it. You know, fans are worried. They're filled with anxiety about their bullpen because it's a concern and there's no going away with that. I don't know. I mean, Rich Dorman has, just in his short time here, produced a first round draft pick in Major League Baseball. Cooper Jerpy was like 2-6 as a sophomore, and then he was a National Pitcher of the Year the following year. So I think Rich has a little bit of a handle on what it is to be a pitching coach. he's obviously gotten other guys drafted as well. So, you know, Aiden May got hurt, but he's having the best season of his career. Jake Kmatz has been a freshman, you know, a full-time player for his 3 years here since a freshman. He's having a really good year under Rich's tutelage. So, I don't know, man. Fans like to
complain. Aiden May's last two starts, those are as good as they've had in a while, I think. I mean,
yeah, and he's been both overpowering and clutch and emotional, and he's been everything that you want out of a frontline starter. And they didn't have that for we missed a month, and then you know, coming back, he was on a pitch limit for several outings there. So, you know, the whole point, and every time you talk to Mitch and anybody about Brady or Micah or Caraway or Aiden May or any of their 73 injured players is we don't care so much about this week in April or this week in March. We want to be ready at the end. And so the whole thing is to build up for right now, these last 2 weeks that we've outlined and then the stretch run. And,
Yeah, that's why these next, you know, 2-3 weeks are so key, because if they can win enough games to get in the top eight, I mean, they're pitching. I mean, you know better than I do, but I'm guessing their pitching is quite a bit better at Goss than it is on the road. And I mean, it's hard to believe that they're going to blow many games at Goss with, you know, just the way they seem to play there. So,
yeah, a low key one of the, you know, AJ Lattery getting hurt has really kind of hurt them in their you know, their midweek kind of deal. And by the way, to your point, the Beavers ERA at home is 3.62 and it's 6.2 on the road. So, that kind of speaks to that. By the way, I think I said they were 6-9 on the road. I think they're actually 7-9 now, but yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, I mean, there's concerns when you go deep in the postseason and you have to get to that fifth guy that starts a game. But again, that's every team in the country, you know, that when you get that deep in the rotation, that's just what it is. And you know, right. As we've seen, 2017 was probably the best team in the country and they didn't win a championship. So anything can happen in college baseball as much as any sport I think that exists. And so, you know, they're building up for the right time, I guess. We'll see what happens.
Well, I thought there was one other thing I was going to talk about baseball, but I can't seem to think what it was. So
I guess the only thing I would bring up is you know, hoping to get Trent Caraway tomorrow and to kind of get a handle on. I think he might be on the verge of returning, if not ready to return this week. We'll see. But you know, he was supposed to be a middle of the order thumper and he hasn't played for so long. And so when you think about his return, boy, that's almost like adding kind of a trade deadline guy in Major League Baseball for the stretch run. The other thing that I think we should probably mention is I have never seen, and even Gavin Turley last year, who had the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, I don't know that I've ever seen a player mired in a bigger slump than Mason Guerra is right now. He's 0 for his last 41. He hasn't had a hit since I think it's April 19th. He hit two homers against Cal, ended the game with two strikeouts and hasn't had a hit since. Last night he struck out, or yesterday he struck out four times against Gonzaga. That's really, you know, a potential problem, you know, moving forward. He's a guy who's one of their biggest power hitters and one of their, you know, in theory, one of their best guys in the lineup. So we'll have to monitor that. But
wow, that is
it's rough. Yeah, that's rough.
That is a long one. I know what else I was going to ask. What do you think? So Bazan is obviously in the hunt for the Golden Spikes.
How do we get this far without talking about arguably the best player in the country?
Well, I was going to ask. So, what's the betting line on Travis winning the Golden Spikes Award?
Being Boy, the best that's I mean, a good question. So there's the kid from Georgia who's got 9 million home runs, even more than him. Actually, let me look that up. I'm kind of curious how many he has. Excuse me, my voice is a bit off today. I would put him at, boy, he's got to be even money, right? He's right there. I would say top one, two, or three. But the guy I was talking about was Charlie Condon with Georgia. You know, Travis has 26 home runs. Well, Charlie's got 33. So he's and that's Travis has hit five in the last two games. So, you know, I that'll be interesting to see. But he's, you know, Charlie's a sophomore. Travis is a junior. That probably is in his favor. He has absolutely rewritten the record book this year. I think Georgia kind of plays in a sandbox there. So you wonder if his numbers are a little inflated. But
yeah, but they're playing against Major League Baseball pitching. You know, it's the SEC, you know. It's,
yeah, that's true.
How's he hit against Arkansas? Has he played Arkansas?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head. It's a good question. But he has just been an absolute crusher all year. Yeah, let's see. How did he do against Arkansas? I can look that up real quick. This is maybe they still play Arkansas. Yeah, they haven't played Arkansas yet, so TBD.
Oh. So it's kind of down to those two.
I would say those are the two front runners. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't speak to, you know, every guy across college baseball, and I don't pretend to. But those are the two guys that would jump off at the top of the list. I mean, I think Travis is coming. I mean, he's a two-time all-defensive player in the Pac-12. I assume he will be this year. I would put my money on Travis, man. Just the way he's swinging it now, you know, the way he's played all season. Oregon State is not a hitter's park. We all know this. You know, it never has been. And to do what he's done so far, really, I mean, dude, I have never seen a season with worse weather. Every time there's a 70 degree day, they're on the road. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they were just in Washington State with horrible weather. They've been all over the place with horrible weather.
Okay, then it's going to be 90 this weekend. So
yeah, it's going to be 80, 85. It's going to be great. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's just set up for, you know, balls flying out of the park.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, historically, they get hotter when the weather gets better and all of that. And so, you know, I think if I was a Beavers fan, I know that people have been filled with a bit of anxiety over the previous couple of weeks, rightfully so. And we haven't even talked about my personal biggest concern, which is defense, which has been very shaky, if, you know, up and down, if not shaky this year. But again, the bullpen by comparison is very similar to others across college baseball. It's just whether or not they're throwing well when it matters most. The offense is coming around. If I was a fan, I would feel pretty encouraged right now where things stand. We'll see how that goes over the next 2 weeks, which, as we've talked about throughout this podcast, are pretty important.
I mean, I was going to say, I don't know that Beaver fans truly appreciate the era they've gone through these last, seven, 8 years. I mean, they've had four of the best players in college baseball the last seven, you know, they, between, you know, Luke Heimlich and Adley Rutschman and Cooper Jerpy and then Bazzana this year. I mean, four of the very, very best in the game at Oregon State, a place that, you know, you wouldn't think would just crank out, you know, the best of the best, you know, it, being in the Northwest and whatnot. So I just feel like that's something that's, I can't think of a sport where that's happened at Oregon State, any sport where you've had a run like that of just greatness.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, not to forget about Nick Madrigal and and even Jacob Melton. You know, he's the number one prospect in the Cardinals organization, number one or two, I think number one in their organization. Is it Cardinals? God, I always mess that up. I'm pretty sure he's in the Cardinals organization. No, Astros. Sorry, Astros. You know, he was a Pac-12 player of the year, 3 years ago. So he's kind of add him to that list. But yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's not even looking back to the Darwin Barneys and Jacoby Ellsbury's and such. But yeah, I mean, I think that's part of what goes into, you know, Beavers fans are just an incredibly knowledgeable fan base. Everybody raves about the crowd in part. It's kind of like the Blazers fans. They cheer at the right times and for the right things, and they really pay attention to the game. It does tend to lead to a little bit of, you know, fanaticism. So they hyper-focus on the negative a bit much in for what I've been able to glean over the last few years. So, you know, and it's
the closest thing we've got to SEC mentality is Oregon State baseball. They've won, they've tasted it, and
yeah,
the expectations are sometimes a little impossible.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen more hand wringing over a team that's ranked number 7 in the country, features the best, one of the best offenses in the country that has survived 3-4 key injuries, actually more than that. That's just to the lineup. You know, we forget that Aiden Jimenez has been out for the year, and he was supposed to be a very important piece of the pitching staff. But anyway, I don't know that I've ever seen more hand wringing out of a fan base with a team that's so fun to watch and so talented. So that speaks to what you're talking about. It's sort of like, you know, the expectations are so high, and you know, I think like you pointed out too earlier, a lot of it's even more intense this year just because of how negative and depressing so many other parts of the sports programs are right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We're good. What do you think? You got anything else?
I mean, do people want to hear more than 45 minutes of us?
No. I don't want to hear us talk for 45 minutes.
No, you're supposed to sell it, Joe.
Yeah. Well, I'm undercutting it. So then we over-deliver.
Right.
Okay. Undersell, over deliver.
There you go.
All right. For Nick Daschle, I'm Joe Freeman. We will thanks for tuning in. We will talk to you again one day in the not too distant future. Enjoy these next this weekend series and whatever happens with your basketball rosters. You said there's one more spot in the men's team they still need to fill.
One more on the men, seven more on the women. So
yeah,
it's gonna be a long summer for Oregon State women's basketball putting a roster together. So.
The long hot summer. Yeah. Stay tuned to OregonLive.com/Beavers for updates on that and more. And then take care. We'll talk to you later.